Well, kudos to you, like I said, for actually, going into these places, into the tunnel to actually get the evidence. Yes, it's blocked off. There is more to this. Again, guys, the ancient stories, the relatively contemporary stories from early archaeologists and explorers, like this is something that seems to have been very quickly hushed up in the modern era, but there's like an evidence trail that leads back quite far. The implications are so nuts, man. Like I'm quite like an open-ended researcher. I dive into a lot of different topics, but prehistory is something that I'm really interested in, like the implications of a kind of pre-cataclysmic society and the evidence globally of something that does seem to be connected through the architecture, through the symbolism, through the type of engineering practices. And one of the things that I think is really interesting about Egypt is the difference in architecture between certain sites. You've got like the Assyrian in Abydos, which seems to reflect the same type of cyclopean stone building as Sacsayhuaman in Peru and other areas around the world that have this kind of fitting together of stones. So there's this weird difference. And what I found, you go to again, like somewhere like the Osirian in Abydos, you've got the Seti, the first temple next door to it. Incredible, amazing. Like, what an awe-inspiring and incredible temple, but not as advanced as the ancient, more older structure that's right next to it, which is the Osirian, or at least I would, place a pretty large bet on it being significantly older than the temple that's been built adjacent to it. And this is not to distract from the Giza Plateau, but just to quickly touch on this place. Like I'm amazed by the fact that it's connected down into the water table, so you literally you can't drain it. It's continuously filling up with water, and there's all these hidden shafts. These all seem to be indicating a deep network of subterranean infrastructure and engineering. Is this the dynastic Egyptians, in your opinion?
That's a great point that no, I think you're right. It's not the dynastic. The Osirian is, and it's also like whatever 20 meters lower than Abydos. They didn't even potentially know that it was there, some people think, when they started building that temple. And John agreed, John West believed it looked exactly like the Sphinx Temple and the Valley Temple next to it that we know go back to the time of the Sphinx as well. Because stones that were pulled from the quarry as the Sphinx was built were placed into the walls in the Sphinx Temple. We can line the layers of rock strata to prove that. And there were other stones also at that time worked into the Sphinx Temple from Aswan granite and things like that. Most of the granite there was added later, which is also mysterious because they somehow married it to the front of these heavily weathered stones as if like rounded weathered stone, somehow they squished granite up into this complex surface structure as casing stones over these ancient limestone blocks. Nobody can explain. It's as if they had to turn this granite into clay and push it onto there, to get a perfect surface tension with it all. So this does get into there is something else. There's what I might call the master technology, I've called it, which is, there might have been these things, honestly, like geopolymers and other things like that at certain eras or for certain uses, but there was something else that was a technology that I believe goes all the way back to those earlier times. It is definitely present at the Osirian. And not only that, but at every one of the temples in the south, I think you look under any one of them, you're going to find, the last version of this temple, and then the one before that, and the one before that. If we have this kind of technology, we might see all that now.
Well, this is the thing, and again, that's actually something that is mirrored around the world with different places where you have, again, an incredible temple, incredible structure, but lo and behold, below the ground is a more ancient, more impressive, more advanced network. I'm forgetting the name of it because it's really hard to remember. Chavín de Huanta in Peru. That one's a really impressive
Sure.
example. Okay, that's on my list, my brother. I need to go out there as soon as I can. Peru is calling to me just as much as Egypt, to be honest, just because of these connections that are propping up all over the place. But yeah, the stone work and also the materials being used, and that's another thing that I was mentioning in my video recently on the Giza Plateau, is the fact that you have to take into consideration the actual complementary reverberatory geophysical landscape that you're dealing with, because you're dealing with granite and limestone, acoustic amplification through limestone, piezoelectric activation through granite in the pyramid structures. So the idea of being able to kind of catch resonance and figure out what's underneath subsurface structure vibration is specifically like the Giza Plateau is a very unique geophysical environment to do that type of research, right? And it also ties in to just what they were doing with these geoenergetic materials, and materials that can produce electrical charge under mechanical stress and amplify acoustic the whole acoustic engineering element of prehistoric temple sites around the world is another thing I'm very interested in. Archaeoacoustics or psychoacoustics, and how sound can influence consciousness, which we now know through modern science. This is not, sci-fi. So, the whole choice of specific materials, do you think that this plays a role in whatever it was that they were really trying to do with these structures?
100%. Yeah. The high content of the quartz in that red granite that all comes from Aswan, the quartz is very important in many ways, in energetically, also there's things we're learning if you look into Marcel Vogel and his research on the Vogel crystals, the things they can do in terms of what they do to water, structuring water, in terms of potentially actually generating energy when put under pressure, like you're saying. These obelisks, they had many different functions, I think. And I like that you are bringing up also Chavin de Hontar is a really important site, which you definitely should get to. But there are similarities between that and also other sites like Mitla in Mexico that I've also seen, right. But they're doing so much.
And Teotihuacan as well, right? The pyramid with the acoustic.
But in terms of ones that actually have vast labyrinths of tunnels and right, underneath right. them, which Teotihuacan does as well, I think. But Mitla is one of the most interesting ones that
That one's new to me. I'll make a note of that. That one's new to me.
Yeah, my friend Marco Vigata is working on a project there where they're uncovering this whole, it's always been known as this kind of entrance to the underworld, just like Chavin, which is really way out there. It's far from the Sacred Valley. It's up north.
Yeah.
It's the most incredible bus ride. Oh my God.
I bet.
But you get out there and the thing is, it's not just, it's not just the fact that there are these labyrinths underground, but that they are very clearly all being used for ceremonial initiation rituals of experiencing your own death is what the initiation is.
Yeah. And they produce like standing wave patterns, infrasonic reverberations, and they even found conch shells that had been specifically kind of altered to produce a certain type of harmonic, right? So there's a whole lot of acoustic evidence in those rituals.
Yeah. I mean, almost all of them are utilizing what I would call the sacred science, which you can look into R.A. Schwaller de Lubick's, and he's explaining how these temples are all actually, there is a science to creating a vibrational environment that actually is designed to lift you into higher states of consciousness, to remove you from the everyday mentality. And that's part of what these initiations, it's not just experiencing your own death, which is, the metaphor, the story you're using is going into this pitch black underworld, having to navigate a labyrinth, maybe after eating some substances that would be mind altering chemicals even, an experience that absolutely not just is like a representation of death itself, but it teaches you what you are outside your body. It's supposed to give you an understanding of what the soul is. And so it's all, that's the same thing at Giza. It's the duat, the underworld of where you go after death. It's all overlaid on the actual physical structures that are under Giza as well.
Well, this is why you do need, when you're looking into these types of subjects, like a multidisciplinary mind to look at different disciplines, different fields, because, I'm kind of blessed because I do a lot of open research in different areas. So I have guests on, quantum physicists and scientists, people who have different opinions on different models. And I recently interviewed a guy called Dr. Stuart Hameroff. I don't know if you're aware of that guy. No, he's quite well known, but it's not really your field. It's quantum biology. He's a quantum biologist, essentially. And him and a man called Sir Roger Penrose developed this model for consciousness that introduces the quantum mechanics side of it. And how is consciousness potentially interacting with quantum fields? And I promise I'm not taking us on too much of a tangent, but it does make sense in relation to the psychoacoustic architecture that we think we're discovering in these prehistoric sites. Whether or not they had any knowledge of quantum mechanics, I doubt it. It was more likely intuited in a different method, a different way, but the effects can't be argued against. So you've got these, you know, temples and sites that are engineered acoustically. We now know through, you know, modern day science, in like binaural beats and the Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences, that we can influence consciousness in different ways through sound, harmonics, through different oscillations. It changes your brainwave from theta to delta to alpha, and all of this, right, changes your state of consciousness. And these quantum biological models that are now coming out are looking at the what are called microtubules inside the neurons. So each of your neurons, you know, the protein subunits are made out of these little kind of helical twisting Fibonacci sequence following tubes called microtubules. And their research is all about how these microtubules are small enough on a micro scale and sensitive enough to pick up on quantum vibrations in fields. And this could be playing a very significant role in how we experience consciousness. So if you think about, you know, sitting inside a giant megalithic stone instrument, you know, an amplification resonance chamber, essentially, and this reverberation is going through you, infrasound is literally rattling your bones, because that's how it works. You can't perceive infrasound through the human ear. You perceive it through that bass. And if anyone's ever been to a rave or, you know, like you feel that bass going through your diaphragm, that's infrasonic reverberation. And all of this plays a role on a cellular level, on a consciousness level with your body. So what we're looking at, like you said, in my opinion, I think you'll agree with this, we're looking at a lost avenue of science that explored acoustics and vibration and sound and consciousness. And this was a very expansive, very enlightening form of scientific exploration that was more like alchemy and shamanism with mathematics and engineering smashed together. And if you're a fan of Terence McKenna, I'm not sure if you are, but he would call this the archaic revival, bringing back these old methods of plugging into that unified reality, plugging into that, you know, deep state of consciousness. But we're now looking at it through scientific methods. And so, you know, a lot of these ancient practices done in Egypt and around the world, I think, are going to be slowly evidenced just through the way that science is progressing in these fields.
Absolutely. There's so much. I mean, I know of there are vibrational frequency-based hospitals, essentially, in Egypt. It's there are resonance chambers. This technology it's not the same as the kind of technology we've developed today, but it is heavily based on the crystalline energies and vibrations, harmonies, and realizing how those things can affect the human body. I think when the Great Pyramid was originally all together and working, it's like you could literally lay down in the king's chamber in that box and be healed of practically anything instantly. There's so many things that the pyramid can do, I believe. That is an entire field of science that is separate from the foundation of our whole field of science. And it really does have a lot to do with these crystals, like you say. And like you said, also a standing wave. A standing wave is a way that I would explain some of these things that people call curses. Because under Giza, it's real. There are these energy fields where if you enter into them, it's going to make you sick. It's going to give you a nasty headache. I felt it in some places before when things were just opened and stuff. There are these pockets that are, it's like radiation almost. You walk into and you get sick. You want to vomit. People get random nosebleeds or hallucinate. They see things that aren't there. There are energy fields that are actually standing wave that's placed in a single spot. And I think the crystal in the bedrock ends up helping to hold those energies in place. So there is actually a science to this idea that there are things that could make, like Howard Carter's team when he found Tutankhamun, get all sick and things like that, that aren't woo-woo, it's not magic. There's science to that, and there are protections that are invisible on the Giza underworld and other places. Anywhere I've gone underground in Egypt and other countries, where these structures are, there is always a high crystalline content of that bedrock.
In fact, like I recently got back from Malta, where there is a extremely dense concentration. In fact, it's one of the largest, if not the largest concentration of megalithic sites in the world, because it's only a small kind of archipelago of islands just off the coast of Italy. And there's so many sites there. I'm putting out a documentary meticulously trying to edit it whilst doing all of this madness is just kind of blagging my head. I swear I'm like half asleep all the time at this moment, because I'm just trying to get everything done. But literally, I went to the islands of Malta because of a place called the Hypogeum. Are you familiar with the Hypogeum? And that's another area where you've got
Specific resonant
yeah, oh,
frequency.
for sure, brother. Have you been inside it?
I've never been to Malta. I know about the Hypogeum, though.
It's a subterranean, multi-level subterranean complex. And when I was down there, you can even see the glistening of the quartz in the stone. Like the whole place is just completely glistening with all of these quartz fragments inside of the stone. So again, it's an energetic place. It's like 5,000 plus years old, and that's the conventional dating of it. So again, yeah, it just speaks to what you were saying about a definite focus on subterranean resonance complexes. This seems to be a marker of whatever this civilization or kind of global culture was.
Yeah, so much of it is underground, and I keep telling everyone like 95% of Egypt is underneath still. We're seeing such a small fraction of what it really is. The much older stuff, which is what I'm most interested, the pre-dynastic stuff, it's all underneath. I actually just released another film yesterday that's it's called Egypt's Underground Cities and Long Range Tunnel System, I think, which is an interview I did with my friend Aminya last year, and he describes very in detail, as someone who is an archaeologist. He trained at Minya University for ancient history and stuff. He's telling me in this interview, there is this underground city under Karnak at Luxor. There is two of them at least in the Minya district, which is Tell el Amarna, Akhenaten's area. There's two there, Tuna Gebel on one side and Beni Hassan on the other side, and these two underground cities there are connected underneath the Nile to each other. And I have another interview about this with another friend who's a very, very respected archaeologist and guide Egyptologist, who also confirms to me that these underground cities from Luxor to Minya to Giza are all interconnected with this long-range system that spans the entire length of the Nile, probably right on into Sudan, very likely. And these tunnels are discovered in very rural areas, far from any of the temples. Hakim Awiyan, he used to describe playing in the tunnels as a child. He tells one story about one of his friends when they were kids. He went down the tunnels under Giza and he got lost, and he didn't come up until he was at Saqqara, which is 15 miles away or
One
so.
of the other places I want to bring up before we kind of finish off is the Serapeum and Saqqara, because this is another place that I've been to that I find incredible, and it does also tie in my opinion, to these acoustic resonance sciences, because the above ground temple site has a lot of indications architecturally towards musical instruments and the use of vibration. And then you've got this subterranean complex with, I think, what, like 24 of these huge granite blocks, these jet black gigantic sarcophagi that are done with such precision that it's basically on par with current aerospace engineering, with the actual precision of these the machining precision. So what do you think about the Serapeum? Is this another example of potentially pre-dynastic technology that's just hiding in plain sight? Because the actual mainstream story is that this is for the Apis bull cult, and this is the sacred burial site of Apis bulls, but there were no bulls ever recovered, and these are very small little subterranean tunnels to get these gigantic 70-ton mega megalithic sarcophagi in. So what's going on in the Serapeum, in your opinion?
Definitely one of the most important sites in the whole of Egypt. Those boxes are evidence of technology that we definitely do not have today. Like I've heard people say, like if you had like $1 trillion, you might be able to pull enough equipment together to make one. But it's you'd have to develop new tools. It would be basically impossible for us to do anything like that today. And it was clearly done with ease 24 times more than that, that those boxes are everywhere. And what is their actual function? I think there are many. And but I definitely agree that those boxes are probably way pre-dynastic.
Well, they've got these. You get these like scribbly little cartouches on them, and you got this kind of like chicken scratch, and that is certainly done after the fact. That has been done after the fact to probably like try and sell it off to the highest bidder. Put a little cartouche on it or whatever. But this is not
Ramses II tagged his name on everything.
the graffiti artist of their time, just slamming tags on everything, right?
And there is also right next to the Serapeum, you've got at least 4 kilometers of tunnels underneath Djoser's pyramid, all wound up in another one of these labyrinths. And I've gone all through that too, and I've even gone down to some of the lower levels. They're still finding more. They haven't gotten to the end of any of them. That's like I say, Saqqara is connected by tunnels all the way back to Giza. That's confirmed. The tunnels go from Giza to Zawiya al Aryan, which is called the Area 51 of Egypt.
That's the one that wasn't originally, there wasn't originally a military site there, right? This is the one that slopes down, and it's like a kind of a basin that they discovered with limestone blocks, and they even did like a Hollywood film there once, right? Where they had like this scene of them coming down off of the ramp or something, but now they've built a military base around this area.
Yeah, it's a ruined pyramid. The pyramid is gone. All that's left is the underside of it, much like the pyramid at Abu Rawash. But there is something at Zawiya El Aryan there's a major energy anomalies. There's like weird physics doesn't really follow its normal laws there. I've heard extraterrestrial objects from off planet there. That there's a big underground complex right under there. There are some things that make it one of the most difficult places in Egypt to get access to. I only know a couple people who have been able to get in there, but there's a very important site connected to it, and there's some kind of like portal energy or some kind of potentially interdimensional thin spot in time space or something like that, some kind of a anomaly, which is why I think they built the military base around it.
I was watching it like, this dude is on one. He's just down there on his own. That's impressive, man. Like, the hats off to you for actually doing that. All the armchair skeptics sitting there saying this, that, and the other. Here's a guy that's literally getting the sand in his fingernails and going down into the tunnels and finding it.
This dirt that is now blocking up that tunnel is it wasn't there at first. There's hundreds of gated entrances and shafts on the plateau itself. Shafts just full of sand, shafts that are gated, doors that go into cliff sides that are gated. And that was my point. People don't realize how many entrances there are right on the plateau.
Some of the footage, I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen any of this footage before of these different entrances, going into these places, into the tunnel to actually get the evidence. Yes, it's blocked off. There is more to this. Again, guys, the ancient stories, the relatively contemporary stories from early archaeologists and explorers, like this is something that seems to have been very quickly hushed up in the modern era.
It's real. There are these energy fields where if you enter into them, it's going to make you sick. There are these pockets that are, it's like radiation almost. You walk into and you get sick. These tunnels were, it was unbelievable. They were full, I mean, they're 10, 12 feet wide and tall, square.
What?
The Vatican Museum, where the pine cone is, and there's the big, this is all a metaphor for the pineal gland and.
They know exactly what's going on.